This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
Thanks, Jane, for taking the time today to come on our show. Appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here.
Jane, why don't we start off, please, if you can introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your company.
Sure. My name is Jane Thompson. I'm an architect, and I'm the owner of an architectural firm here in Ottawa that started in 1995, so almost 30 years ago. We're a relatively small firm, about 4 to 6 employees, focused in the residential market, but that includes a wide range of projects, from single family homes to large developments, affordable housing. We've done things like an Indigenous women's shelter, a temple for Buddhist nuns. So a real interesting mix of different projects we do.
Well, first of all, congratulations, 30 years. That's quite an accomplishment. And we'll get into the lessons learned a little bit later in the show. But you're obviously you're trained as an architect. Did you start off, Jane, your career working for somebody before starting this, or did you go right out of school, right into this?
I am a graduate of the University of Waterloo, which is a co-op program, which was really useful as I was going through school. So I had 5 different work placements while I was in school, and then another 3 recently after I graduated. All architects have to do 3 years of mandatory experience and then write exams. So you do have to work for a number of other people before you start your own firm. But I did start my firm quite early. I found that while I was working in these other offices, I was spending a lot of time thinking how I would do things if it was my business, which I think probably made me a better entrepreneur than an employee, although of course I worked very hard. I also, by the time you graduate from architecture, your late 20s and get licensed, and I did want to have children. Architecture was a pretty tough place 40 years ago for a woman. There were very few of us, and it was looking after kids, taking maternity leave was hard. So that was also, starting my own business was a way for me to be able to blend my work and my life, and looking after kids in a way that suited my lifestyle.
Yeah, I guess the environment would have been completely different all those years ago in terms of, you know, even maternity leave. Now it's much more accepted, paternity leave versus just maternity leave. And it was a different world back then, for sure. So and do you mind me asking, why architecture? Like, what got you into that in the first place?
Well, I enjoyed a whole range of different subjects. I spent a lot of time doing art. I was also very interested in math and the environment and literature, and architecture is a field where you combine a whole bunch of different skills. So I thought of it practically as a career that would allow me to do that. Also, when I was a kid, my mom would take me wandering around the city on walks. One of those was with Jane Jacobs, who's most people know as one of the early people starting in the 1960s that had a whole different way of looking at cities and how they really worked. And so I was very inspired by that, about looking at buildings and cities around me. So I think the practical aspect of using my skills, and then the interest in how buildings, what buildings looked like, how cities worked, was what got me started on that path.
And interesting decisions that are made sometimes at childhood at that young age has such an impact on your future. I always find that fascinating, that, you know, sometimes you take a little bit of a turn somewhere else and it takes you in a whole different direction. That's really interesting. Jane, do you focus on residential projects, commercial projects, both? What does that look like?
It would be about 75% residential. We do work. We've recently been working on the tavern patios across Ottawa. So there's one on Major Hill Park, for example, at the Falls. We also work for the Aviation Museum, helping them improve their visitor services, improving their accessibility. So we do some commercial projects, but typically we like the residential work because it's as I was working for other firms, sometimes you'll do large office buildings or industrial, and they don't have the same meaning to people as, you know, either as their own home. The Indigenous shelter, for example, was a project that really felt like we were making a difference in people's lives. And even if it's a single family home, then this is people's biggest investment. It's where they spend a lot of time. It can really affect their quality of life. So I think all of our projects share that aspect. We've also done some environmental research, and we're very interested in the environmental impact of all the work we do and trying to reduce energy use. We've done some off-grid projects. We're working on an affordable housing project now that tries to be net zero, so that it generates as much energy as it uses. We've also done research for CMHC on how to make housing more energy efficient and looking at the role of housing across the country. So that's another aspect that we're really interested in.
And what kind of trends are you seeing coming in your industry in the next, say, 5 years?
Well, going back to the last four or five, it's, I think that a lot of changes have already happened through COVID. We certainly all learned how to work virtually and how to work together in different ways. The industry was also disrupted by shortages of different materials and labor and a dramatic increase in construction costs. So that's caused some shift in the industry that I don't think we're very happy about, but obviously we have to find ways to deal with. There's also a much greater computer presence as far as AI and BIM, which is a system that includes a lot of building information in the drawings. So I think there's also 3D printing, so that you can actually build buildings with a 3D printer. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it's really interesting.
I've not seen that, no.
We set up a grid and a material, sort of like a concrete pours out of this, and you can make a full-size building, you can imagine, with this huge machine on site, and it automatically takes the information that you have put into a drawing and turns that into an actual built product, which is very different, for, of course, from the way the industry used to work.
Actually, there was an article, was it yesterday or the day before, I think in the Toronto Star, about that. It's a robotic device that basically pours the concrete and everything is done, you know, by this device as opposed to by humans. Apparently more time efficient, you know, can get buildings up faster and for less money. So hopefully that helps with some of the affordability issues around home ownership. So you've seen a lot, Jane, in the 30 years. You started this business, you had a young family at the time. At what point in this 30 year history did you start, you know, bringing on staff and starting to grow it into something that was more than just you?
Yeah, the first, I started my business, I had done some work in Winnipeg, and then I moved here in 1995, which was the height of the recession in Ottawa. Even the government employees had been cut, so usually Ottawa misses the worst of the recession, but this one was a particularly hard Ottawa recession. And I realized when I got here, I didn't know a soul. I had no contacts. I'd done lots of work in other places, but it didn't really have meaning to anybody here. So that did mean I had a fairly slow start, and I had two young kids at home. So I'd say first 2 or 3 years was mostly me. I would have students from different co-op programs, Carleton or Algonquin, that would help fill in. And then gradually I had one employee, then two, three, four, et cetera. So it was, for me, a very slow process getting started, which suited me fine, because I wanted, you know, to be working half time or two thirds time when my kids were young. And then about 15 years ago, I took on two employees who are still with me today and are planning to take over the business shortly. So that was a big milestone for me when I had people. Before then, it was people would come and go, and they're great people. We learned a lot from each other, but having stable employees that become full part of the team was probably a big break.
That's interesting, you know, because so many of the stories we hear revolve around a much larger business and that being the only way to have success. And I completely disagree with that. I think you can have a nice small business that you know, that really yep. fits your personal needs and your employees' needs. And it's not for everyone. It's not for every entrepreneur. It's not for every employee. But boy, if you get the right match of people that like a small team environment, and you have the entrepreneur that likes that as well, you can really create something special. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I've been really happy with the turn that's taken. I do think I've heard the statistics that larger businesses are more profitable, but honestly, that's not particularly my concern. We all want to do projects that we like to do. I've been able to always have enough income that I haven't had to lay people off or worry about, you know, paying the paychecks. So we've always done well to be able to do the things that we wanted to. And most of the time we've been an all-woman organization, which especially a long time ago when you would have many all-male architecture firms, but very, very few all women, that created a special environment. My two children are also daughters. So, and my original office was in my home. So it was a very, a different kind of an atmosphere. That I found very comfortable to work in.
That's great. There's a book, I think it's by Bo Burlington. It's called Small Giants. And it's all about companies that purposely don't go past a certain point. You know, and that can vary, right? It could be a 200-person organization, it could be a 5-person or a 10-person, but it's a whole, each chapter is a different story about a different company that's decided to stay at a certain level. And the retention of their employees is off the charts. Because the employees know, you know, that there's a comfort level there. They get to know the business. They feel they have, even though they don't have a financial stake in the business, they feel they're part of something because it's small enough that their voice is heard. So anyone listening that, you know, that is thinking it always has to be a big business, I think Jane would agree with me that that doesn't always have to be the case, that you can run a really nice, a smaller business and it's good for everyone involved. Jane, just to switch topics here quickly, 30 years in business, for a listener that is maybe struggling right now that owns a business, is there a piece of advice you'd like to pass along to that person?
Yeah, I think a few. One is certainly patience. Depending on where you're starting from, if you can start your business with a product ready to go or along a client or a project, then that's great. But if you don't have that all ready to go, there is quite a period at the beginning where it's very, very hard work to find work to get your name out there. So either starting a business when you have something that's going to support you at the beginning is great, or having their money put aside or a plan, not an expectation that you're going to be making money right away. Also, I think if you do a really good job, over time, you develop lots of happy clientele who pass your name along, so that will work eventually for you. I think that would be the main factor. I guess it always helps to love what you're doing. I think that makes it worth doing. For me, I'm interested in what I do rather than being an entrepreneur per se. So there's different ways of looking at it. Some people like, I think, the aspect of having their own business, making money or calling all the shots. For other people, it's being able to create an environment that works for them and to be able to do the things that they like to do. So there's a whole bunch of different reasons for why you would be an entrepreneur, and you can set your business up to suit whatever it is you're trying to achieve.
So, you know, there's been a lot of interesting articles lately about, is it follow your passion as an entrepreneur, or is it follow your talent? And there's two schools of thought there. One is you got to follow your passion because that'll keep you going. The other school of thought is saying, okay, that's great, but if you don't have the talent, then it doesn't matter how passionate you are, you're not going to. I'm curious what your opinion is on that. It doesn't have to be either or, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, definitely best if those two things coincide. And architecture is very tough to get through. So you've pretty well had to demonstrate your capability before you even get licensed. But I think my interest is in complicated projects that create a particular environment, unusual projects that require a lot of thought and communication with clients. So I think in this case, I've ended up doing that kind of project, because I am quite a good listener and I care about all those details. I find that very interesting. So I feel like if you start with what you're interested in and what you feel that you're good at, there's some things that I wasn't, maybe still I'm not that great at. So like the business aspect of it, for example. So I think if you focus on what you do very well, and the more you can then get other people to help you that are in areas where you don't have as much interest or skill or talent, then that's ideal.
I had a guest on the podcast, Jane, a few weeks back, and she had a really interesting comment. She said how important outsourcing was, but she also said that before she outsourced, whether it was the accounting or marketing or HR portion of her business, she first wanted to try to do it herself. So at least she had a baseline understanding of those elements so that when she did meet with someone that she was looking to, you know, to farm this work out to, that she had an understanding of what it is that she needed done. Would you agree with that? With that approach to anyone listening?
Yes, I think I followed that approach because until you get into the details of where money's going and how it's coming in, then that really helps you with planning your business. And if you leave that for someone else, you really wouldn't have the same in-depth knowledge, especially at the beginning. And when you're small, you don't have money to pay for all of these things, you're just getting started. So sometimes you don't have too much choice, that if you have more, if you might have time available because you don't have as much work yet, then it's a great idea to put that to use to doing as much of the work yourself as you can.
So along the same lines, Jane, what advice would you give to someone that's listening that's wants to start a business, they have an idea, but they just have not taken that next step?
And I guess it would depend so much on what kind of a business it is. I think what I would have done differently is reach out to people more before I started my business. I think it's also good to be in the industry for a while, making contacts, learning how other people do things. When I first started my business, I had this, all of a sudden I realized how little I knew, because I was doing various tasks, but I had so many people around me that were assisting with those and that I could go to. So the more you have a chance to learn all those different skills in another environment, or the more you can reach out to either other entrepreneurs or coaches to help you. We do have a mentoring system in architecture, for example, that pairs a young architect that's still getting licensed with a more mature architect. So I think the more people can have some kind of a support like that, the easier and less terrifying sometimes it would be.
Well, what a great idea. Every industry should really have that. That mentoring and that opportunity for someone, inexperienced to learn from someone that is experienced. That's really sets up that industry for success versus just you've got your degree or your diploma or your certification, off you go. Good luck. That's really smart. Jane, I'm curious, you mentioned earlier in the podcast that you came here from Winnipeg and you didn't really know a lot of people. For someone that's listening that may not have a lot of contacts, is there anything that you can share on your journey from Winnipeg to Ottawa where you had to develop these contacts that you could share with someone out there that may be struggling with the same thing?
I had one early experience where I, for example, because I was with my kids, I went to a playgroup and there were a lot of people there that I would meet. And there was one woman that I had talked to at playgroup for 3 years, and then only at that point mentioned that I had an architectural business. And she said, "Oh no, if you had told me that my dad was looking for an architect," and I eventually did end up working with him, but never be shy to obviously you don't want to come on so strong that you're promoting yourself all the time. But I think I went too far in the other direction, that it's always good to mention what it is you do, because then either the person you're talking to might have a need for that, or someone that they're going to be talking to later. So that was one thing I think is good to do. I also thought at that point that I could I had a portfolio of work from the Manitoba Children's Museum, for example, and I gave that material to the Canada Aviation and Space Museum, just sent off my portfolio. I've got lots of, here I am. I've got lots of experience with museums and exhibits. And I didn't hear anything for 2 years. And then that portfolio happened to get on the right person's desk. And I've been working for them for 25 years since. Wow. So sometimes it can take a long time. Maybe if I'd followed up, then you think you send something out and you hear nothing back. You think, well, that was a waste of effort. But it often is surprising how things you do might take years to find the right person, but they do eventually pay off.
It's that fine line, isn't it, though, Jane, that, you don't want to come across too strong when you're meeting somebody for the first time, but you also, if you really believe in what you do, we coach our clients all the time. If you really believe in what you do, by not telling people what it is that you do, you're doing a disservice. But I don't know if it's a Canadian thing, and I'm Canadian, born and raised in Ottawa, so I'm not knocking it, but it's this almost shyness or meekness about us that, mm-hmm. Oh, we don't want to, ruffle any feathers but at the end of the day, again, if you really truly believe in what it is that you do, without coming, you don't have to be obnoxious about it, but it never hurts to at least mention the service that you provide. There's a saying in our business, the marketing business, that 5% of the market's ready to buy your product at any one time. That's true of any industry. Sometimes you're 3%, but in that 3 to 5% range. And so therefore there's always someone that's looking for, whether it's an architect firm or a marketing firm or accounting firm or whatever it is that you do. And the only way you're ever going to find them is by at least mentioning what it is that you do. So that's interesting. Jane, before we went live, you were telling me a bit about some of the work you're doing in the community. Can you share that with our listeners, please?
Sure. Yeah, I am just talked about the mentoring program. I have mentored a number of students, and that's actually interesting for me as well. It keeps me up to date with what younger people are doing. Actually, some of my best employees have come to me because I through a mentoring situation. I'm also active with my community association. I live in an area that used to be the Rockcliffe Air Base that is just being redeveloped as a unique kind of community. So I take my architectural expertise and I review all the development applications for work, and I advocate for transit and good architecture, good landscaping. So I've created community design plans. So I try, whenever I see an expertise that I have, I try to bring that in to improve either the community I live in or the one where my office is located.
That's great, Jane. Hey, listen, before we let you go, where can listeners find out more about your company?
You can reach us at janethompsonarchitect.com. We do have a website which has email contacts. We have a tool where we've mapped every project we've worked on in the city. So if you send us an email, we'd be happy to send that off to you so that you could take a look at the projects we do.
That's great. Jane, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extensionmarketing.com and book a discovery call today.